We're holding on page Chof Gimel in Yoma Ois Nun Beis. Towards the end of the Perek, most of the Perek has been talking about the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Torah, the sprinkling of the blood, etc. And you have the expression in the Pasuk that says that the Kohen Gadol is accomplishing kapara for the Jewish people and then for the and he's accomplishing kapara and tara for the Oyel Moed, Hashochen Itam B'soich Tum Oisam, where Hashem's Shechina is among the Jewish people even when they're tamei. So now the Gemara brings on that. Amalei Ahuminah L'Rab Chanina. A certain min said to Rab Chanina, Hashta Bori Tmeyon Atum. He says, look, you Jews are now certainly Tomei. In other words, you were Tohar originally, fine, but now you're in Golos, you're Tomei, you're goners. Dichtiv Tumasa B'Shulecha. As you have the Pasuk in Eicha that says the Jewish people's Tumah is on the hems of their garments. The metaphor being, in other words, like as if it's on the hem where everybody can see it. So in other words, so you have no connection with Hashem anymore, Chas V'Shalom. Omalei, but Rav Chanina answers him right back. No, tochazi ma'iksib b'hu. Look what it says about us Jewish people. Hashochen itam b'soich tumoisam, where it says that Hashem dwells with us even among our tumas. Afilu b'zman sheim tmeim shchina imahem. Even when they were tamei, the shchina is still with us. And in fact, Maharsha points out, so the min took the view that so you have tumah sibashullah. What kind of tumah are we talking about? So earlier in the previous pasuk, it mentions that the Jewish people are like a nida. So okay, in the nida hayase, you have in the pasuk before that in Eicha. So this min took the view, well, the same way as a nida is not allowed to have relations with her husband, the same way you're cut off from Hashem. And Reb Chanina answers him right back. On the contrary, you see, when a husband and wife, when the wife is in Nida, they're still allowed to be together in the same house. They're just not allowed to have relations. So the same way, the Eibishter is still with us all the time. Even now, we're in Golos. Imoy Anochi Betzar. Which Ion Yaakov says also the Min was trying to argue. Look, once you're Tomei already, you might as well live it up. You might as well continue becoming Tomei. And Reb Chanina tells him it's not so. We still have the Shechina with us, and if we make ourselves more Tomei, then the Shechina will go away, and we don't want to do that. All right, Shnei Seirim Perek Shishi. The topic of this Perek is mostly about the Seir La'azazel. So after they did the girdle on the two Seirim earlier in the Masechta, here in this Perek, it starts by talking about the criteria for the Shnei Seirim. Then it talks about the then it starts talking about the dinim of the Seir HaMishtaleach. The Kohen Gadol does the third vidui on its head, and then he sends it off. So the Mishnah says, Mosri the Misha HaYameilichai. The Kohen Gadol would now hand over the Seir La'azazel to the one who's supposed to be taking it. Now, a kol kshedim lahilichai. In principle, any yid is kosher to take it to the cliff. Ela she'asu ha'koyinim golem keva, but the koyinim made a regular rule of it. V'lohei manichen es Yisrael lahilichai. They wouldn't allow a Yisrael to take it. They always insisted that it was a koyin. Further on in the sugya, Maharsha refers to something that the Chizkuni says on the pasuk that they would always pick somebody where they knew with Ruach HaKodesh that he's going to pass away during that year. So that may have to do with because apparently there was something along the lines of that because he's doing this, he's not going to live much longer. So therefore, they would davka pick somebody where they knew that Min HaShemayim is destined to pass away that year anyway. That may be why they only picked Kohanim for the job, because otherwise the Yisraelim are going to think that you have something against this guy. You're sending him off, and soon afterwards he's going to die. Whereas we know that the Kohen Gadol is certainly looking out for his fellow Kohanim. Anyway. However, Amr Rabbi Yossi, Maisiv Elicha Arsala. However, Rabbi Yossi says no, because it happened once that a fellow named Arsala took it, Yisrael Hoya, and he was a Yisrael, so he disagrees with this concept that the Kohanim Golem made this general rule. Maybe he would say that they allow exceptions to the rule. Maybe he would say there was no such rule b'chlal. No, they would pick somebody, but just the pasuk says Ish Iti. It has to be somebody who's designated for that purpose from before.
Scary. They're sitting there, don't pick me, don't pick me.
Well, it's not like they would actually say to the person, you're going to die within the next year. The Kohen Gadol, we're talking about in a time when the Kohen Gadol, particularly, had Ruach HaKodesh, then he would be able to pick. So maybe Rabbi Yossi's statement that the one time Yisrael took it might be when the Kohen Gadol doesn't have Ruach HaKodesh, and then therefore, then there's they're just going to have to pick somebody at random anyhow. So I don't know. Anyway, continues the mission of a kevesh osuloi. Now they made a ramp, or more, a kevesh means a ramp, but here it means more like a causeway, like an elevated walkway, mipnei, to go from Yerushalayim out to the desert, mipnei bavli, because of the Bavliim, which the Gemara is going to explain who these Bavliim were, showing Metalshin Besairei, they would be pulling at his hair. Now, Sairei could either mean the hair of the guy who's supposed to take the Sairei Lazazel, or it can mean the hair of the goat. Either way, they're grabbing at it, but Omrim Lein, they're telling him, Toro Vatsay, take the goat and get out of here. Take the goat and get out of here. As the Gemara is going to say, they would say, we have so many Averis, we want to get rid of them as fast as possible. So therefore, they have to build this Kevesh, this causeway, so that they can't grab a hold of him or the Sairei. Next time, don't sin. Yeah, it's true. It's true. The Gemara is going to end up explaining who these Bavliim were. They were wild types. So we'll see more about them in the Gemara. Anyway, so now you have again, Ein Yaakov for some reason has the pieces of Gemara out of order. In the actual Gemara, you have at one point they ask Rabbi Eliezer a number of questions involving the Sairei Lazazel, which we're going to have them further on Omid Beis in the next Ois, and then afterwards, having mentioned that, then the Gemara digresses to mention another question that they asked him. But here in Ein Yaakov, it has it out of order for some reason. Anyway, Shala Isha Chachomer Es Rabbi Eliezer. A wise woman asked Rabbi Eliezer, given that everybody who was involved in worshiping the eagle, everybody did the same kind of thing. All of them were involved in worshiping the eagle. So why were they killed in different ways? There were three different ways. You had some of them were killed by the Levim, where Moshe tells them, some of them were killed by a plague, by Yigash Hashem HaSa'olam, the last pasuk in that perek. And then you have some of them, Moshe, after he ground up the eagle and put it in the water, then he gave them to drink, like Sotus, and some of them swelled up and burst like Sotus. So why three different ways? Omallah, so Rabbi Eliezer did not want to answer her directly. So he answers her with a sort of evasive way of saying, Ein chochma le'isha ela b'pelech. A woman's wisdom is only with the spindle, only as far as spinning wool. Shenema, as in fact we find in the pasuk, chochma associated with women, with spinning. Shenema v'chol isha chachma slave v'yadeho tavu. All the wise-hearted women of the time of the Mishkan were all spinning the wool, and they were spinning the goat's hair, and so forth. So, in fact, they have the special chochma. Marshal refers to the Gemara in Shabbos that they have the special chochma to spin the hair while it was still on the goats. So, Rabbi Eliezer, in other words, on the surface, at least, he's fobbing her off and saying that I'm not going to answer the question. The Gemara is going to point out soon that Rabbi Eliezer had a mahalach that he would never say anything that he hadn't heard from his Rebbe. So then, according to that, since the Gemara is bringing this in that context, then apparently that would be the reason why he doesn't want to, because he hadn't heard a specific answer to this from his Rebbe, and therefore he didn't want to say it on his own. Why would he have such a hanhaga? So Marsha actually elsewhere in Brachas explains that when we're talking about, there's a difference between a matter of Svara versus a matter of Kabbalah. If it was a matter of Svara, then sure, Rabbi Eliezer would say something of his own. But if it's a matter that you need to know by Kabbalah from your Rebbe, and he hadn't explicitly heard it from his Rebbe, then Rabbi Eliezer wouldn't want to say it. There is a related idea that's brought. You find many times in Shas that the Gemara will attribute something to a Tana or an Amora where he didn't actually say it in so many words. He said something, and we can deduce from that a principle which we can put into certain words. So the Gemara calls this kind of thing miklala. The Gemara will often add, the Gemara will say sometimes that la v'fedrush itmar, it wasn't said explicitly, al miklala itmar, we deduce it from something he said, and sometimes the Gemara will say v'i miklala mai, what's wrong if we learn it miklala, that's a perfectly valid way of learning. Sometimes the Gemara will say, in fact, that way of learning it is flawed, and in fact there's a slight difference over there which you didn't chapsa. So Rabbi Eliezer, according to that, would be careful in particular with that kind of thing. If he heard something explicitly from his Rebbe, he would say it. But if not, he's not going to use this Miklala method and try to deduce one thing, Maven Dover, Metech Dover, of what his Rebbe him said. With that said, the Rebbe points out in a couple of sichas, we often have Rabbi Eliezer saying things in his own name. We don't find him saying them in the name of his Rebbe. And it's not like he had just one Rebbe that you could say that everything he learned from that one Rebbe. He learned by Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai, sure, but he mentioned there's a place where he mentions Rabbi Sai, my Rebbe's in the plural, implying that he had more than one. So no, the vort is sometimes you have something, a person has learned something, and it becomes so united with him, it becomes so much a part of his Metzius that now he's able to quote it as his own thing, even though in fact he heard it from something else. That's not over. He's not over with that on Kol. He's not over on that on with that on what the Gemara says there in Brachas, that if a person doesn't say something in the name of the one who said it, it's like he's stealing from him because it became this atzim, it became a part of his own Metzius, a part of his own atzmus. Anyway, So on the face of it, Rebbe Eliezer is not answering this woman because, again, he didn't hear it from his Rebbe. On the other hand, the Yerushalmi brings the story and says a different reason. Rebbe Eliezer holds you're not allowed to teach Torah to women. You have a whole discussion about that in Masechta Sota, and Rebbe Eliezer takes a very hard line on it and says you're not allowed to teach Torah to women. In fact, the Yerushalmi goes on to tell that Rebbe Eliezer's son, Hurkanu, says to him, look at this, you know, we're Levim. This woman is a wealthy woman. She's giving Maiserishin to the Levim. Now we forfeited it because of you. She's angry at you now because you don't want to tell her, and we're losing all of that. And Rebbe Eliezer says, you know what, it's worth it not to give over Divrei Torah to Noshim. So there are different drushes that different achronim talk about in this expression in chochma leisha el bepelech. One of them, Ben Yehoyada, brings an idea that pelech is we have by the eishes chayil v'chapeh tomchu folech, and then the next pasuk continues karpa parusil oni, that she sticks out her hand to give tzedakah, and not just tzedakah of money but tzedakah of food to the poor person. He points out the word pelech is the rosh tevis karpa parusil oni, hinting that the real chochma, the real accomplishment of a woman, is the fact that she gives food as tzedakah rather than as you have in the famous story with Ma'ukva and his wife, where the Ma'ukva gives money, but she gives food, which is a more direct hana for the poor person. There's a vote also from Rav Aaron Levin, famous Rav Aaron Levin, the grandfather of the famous lawyer Nat Levin, where he has a sefer called Adrashva Ian. He was a Rav in Raisha before the war. He has a sefer called Adrashva Ian. He says that actually the point is, you think of what happened with these women spinning the wool. So you had some of them are really, really motivated, and they're the ones who even go to the extent of spinning the goat's hair while it's still on the goats. And then maybe you have ones who are less motivated, and we see that the pasuk praises the ones who are more motivated. So therefore, he's actually hinting for her an answer. The same way as you can realize that in your pelech, and in your spinning wool or goat's hair or whatever, there can be different degrees of motivation. The same way when it came to the Jews worshiping the eagle, there could be different degrees of motivation and enthusiasm that they had, and that explains the different punishments. So he's actually hinting to her an answer without saying it straight out. Anyway, so the question still remains, Taka, why were the different punishments? So Itmar, Rav and Levi. So Rav and Levi argue why the difference. One of them says, Zibeach the Kitter Besai, if anybody who actually offered Karbonus or Ktertus to the Eagle, Besayef, then he gets killed by the sword by the Levium. Gipif Vinishik, if he hugged and kissed the Eagle, which is not technically an avoider, the person is Chayav Nissa, and then therefore b'missa, then he gets missa b'dei shemayim. He dies in the plague over there. Samach b'libo, if he's happy in his heart of what's going on, but he's not actually doing anything, b'hidroikon, then he gets public punished with hidroikon, which is that's a disease where a person's stomach swells up and they become jaundiced and sick, which is basically what happens to the soita. So that's one explanation. V'chad amar, the other explanation goes, Now, Rashi points out, one second, a person worships Avodah Zarah by actually Zibeach the Kitter, he's supposed to get Skila. Why are we here? Are we saying Herod? So Rashi says, because they hadn't yet been explained to them, Dalad Mrs. Basin. So therefore, they had to stick with the default, Bnei Noyach get Sayif for everything when they're around any of the Sheva Mrs. Bnei Noyach, and therefore they had to keep it that way as well. Marashah doesn't like that because, look, it's after Matan Torah. So fine, if they didn't know what the Dalad misses yet, just like you have by the Mekoshesh Eitzim, that Moshe asks Hashem and Hashem tells him what punishment, then Moshe should have done the same thing over here. So rather he brings from Rashi on the Pasuk, mentions that the reason is because he treated them like the people of an Ir HaNidachas, where the people of an Ir HaNidachas do in fact get Sayyid, they get punished with the sword. Why Taka it is that they get punished with the sword is a whole other question. There's a Sicha where the Rebbe discusses an interesting point. The Rogachover wants to say that the vote is that Yerani Dachas, in effect, they become Ois Yidim by mass worship of Avodah Zarah, and therefore they get downgraded to the level of Bnei Noyach, and therefore they get Sayyid instead of Skila. And the Rebbe says that's not so and gives a different reason why. It's unusual, but not always does it ever take what the Rogachover says. It's the last word, yeah. Yeah, after Shachat Yisrael. Anyway, so that's one version. B'chad Omer, Edim V'Asra B'Sayif. The other one says, if the person worshipped the Avodah Zarah and there was Edim V'Asra, then he gets the sword. Edim B'Loi Hasra, if there were Edim but they didn't warn him, B'Misa, then he gets Misa B'Dei Shemayim. B'Loi Edim, B'Loi Hasra, V'Asra, B'Loi Edim, B'Loi Hasra, whatever. If there were neither Edim nor Asra, B'Hidroikon, then he gets this disease where his stomach swells up, like, in other words, from drinking the soda water. Okay, so that's the actual answer, even though Rabbi Eliezer didn't want to give it explicitly to this woman. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shivte Shalevi like Ovid Avid Azara. Nobody in Shevet Levi worshipped Avid Azara. Shanema, by Yamid Moshe Bashara Machna, Moshe stood by the gate of the Machna, by Yomer, and he calls out Mila Shemilai, very appropriate now before Hanukkah too, by Oswal of Eil of Kobene Levi, and all the members of Shevet Levi gathered to him, implying that not one of them had worshipped Avid Azara. But so Yosef Ravina for Kamala Lahashmaita Kamei. So Ravina was sitting and saying over the statement of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel, but Esve Bnei Rapapa Ba'aba La Ravina. However, the sons of Rapapa Ba'aba pointed out to Ravina a contradiction to that. You have a posik in Moshe's bracha to Shevet Levi in Mizosa Bracha. He says, that Shevet Levi was so devoted to Hashem that they said about their father or their mother, I didn't see him. In other words, that they didn't say, well, this is my father or this is my mother, and how could I kill them? They did what needed to be done. So you see that their fathers, so you see that some members of Shevet Levi worship Egel. So Ravina says, no, Aviv doesn't mean his father. It means Aviv, means Avi Imem Yisrael, means his mother's father, because sometimes a grandfather can be called a father. So it means where this mother's father is a Yisrael. And Imoi means Imoi Yisrael. And Imoi would mean that, would mean his mother, or his mother's mother, who's also Yisrael. Achiv would be Achiv mi'imem Yisrael. When the pasuk continues, ves Echav lehikir, ves Banav layoda. How do you explain that? So Echav means Echav mi'imem Yisrael, means if he had brothers from only his mother's side who are Yisraelim. So his mother had been previously married to Yisrael and had children with him. And Banav would be Bnei Bite mi'Yisrael. And Banav would refer to if he has a grandson, a daughter's son who is Yisrael, and he had worshipped Avodah Zarah, then the Levi wouldn't care and would do what needs to be done. So in fact, we can say that not one of the actual Bnei Levi worshipped Avodah Zarah. Marsha points out, why are the sons of Rapapa Ba'aba pointing out that there's the contradiction only once we say Shivtei Shalevi le'Avodah Avodah Zarah? The psukim themselves seem to contradict each other. The one pasuk says that Kol Bnei Levi gathered to Moshe, and now you have this pasuk Ha'im le'Avodah Zarah. So leaving aside, even if Rabbi Yehuda had never said Shivtei Shalevi le'Avodah Avodah Zarah, just the psukim themselves bring up the question. So he says, because no, without Rabbi Yehuda's statement, you would say, fine, when Moshe says Mila Hashem Eli, what happens is, so all the Levim gather, either some of them had worshipped the Egel and now they regretted it and they're ready to take action, or that they're pretending like they didn't, like they had and they're pretending like they're not. But now, when Rabbi Yehuda clearly says outright that all of Shevet Levi did not worship Avodah Zarah, then we have to understand how it fits with the psukim. So now getting back to the original questions they asked Rabbi Eliezer, which are earlier in the sugya in the Gemara, Shalos Rabbi Eliezer, Chola, suppose the person who is supposed to take the Sarah La'azazel becomes sick. Oh no, sorry, Chola means if the animal is sick, so it can't walk. For the next Mishnah mentions that from Yerushalayim, from the Beis Hamikdash until the cliff that they threw it off of was a distance of 10 mil. Actually, you have different opinions in the Gemara, whether it was 10 mil or 12 mil, whatever it was quite a considerable distance. So that's a few miles. So what if the animal is sick and you can't take it? Would this person be allowed to take the goat and put it on his shoulders in order to carry it there? So again, Rabbi Eliezer, not having heard something befeirish about it from his Rebbeim, he didn't want to give an answer. So instead, he gave kind of an evasive answer. This goat could very well have riding on it both me and you. In other words, it's always a strong animal. It's not a realistic question. You know, the animal is always, they always choose a strong, healthy animal, and therefore there's no question of it being sick and unable to walk. Then they ask him, Chola Meshalchay, Maushi Yishalchen of Yadacher. What happens if the person who was designated to take it becomes sick? Can he delegate it to somebody else to take it? And again, Rabbi Eliezer didn't give a straight answer. Amalahem, Ehe B'sholem Aniva Atem. You and I will be at peace. So Rashi explains that it means basically he's saying, what do you need to ask that? Neither you nor I are going to be involved in that. So therefore, he's saying like it's an irrelevant question. We'll be at peace and you don't have to worry about it. Tosfos Shishonim says somewhat differently. The same way as we just said that he was saying the animal is very strong, he was saying they always picked the person who's very strong too. So that person is good. Halavai, we should be in as much shalom as that guy is in. Then they ask him a third question. Doch voy velo mess. What happens if he pushes the animal off the cliff and it didn't die? Velo mess. Mao shiyered acharavim isenu. Is he required to climb down the cliff over there and kill the animal with his bare hands? And again, Omalahem, instead of giving them a straight answer, he says to them, like the Loshan Aposik, Kain yovdu kolei vecha Hashem, so should all your enemies be destroyed, Hashem. In other words, again, without giving them a straight answer. Mao Shaw actually explains again that even though on the face of it he's not giving them a straight answer, really he's actually hinting them an answer with each one of these things. Again, he didn't want to say straight out because he hadn't heard it from his Rebbe, but Mao Shaw explains he is hinting them answers. So when he said the first question was the first question was what happens if the animal is sick? So he says. So he's saying that, you know what, it's true that if a person, he's saying, yochol aniva, when he says, yochol hu lahakiv aniva atem, what he's hinting at is like this. We have a concept in halacha called chai noseis atzma. A living person carries himself, because when you carry a living person, he distributes and adjusts his weight so as not to weigh you down. And therefore, if you carry a person outdoors on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur, then you're not chayiv midaraisa, it's only an issur derabanan. On the other hand, with an animal, you don't have that. So he's hinting and telling them, you know what? If the shliach had to carry you or me on Yom Kippur, he'd be allowed to, because we're chai noseh satzma. But an animal, you don't have that heter. So therefore, in effect, he's hinting to them that no, you cannot carry the animal on Yom Kippur. If the animal is sick, you're going to have to find a different one, the kashrus. Then when they ask him about the second question, what if the person becomes sick? So when he answers, ehei b'shalom ani va'atem, he's saying, you or I, meaning anybody who's involved over here, the Kohenim in particular, can delegate somebody else. So they could delegate me or they could delegate you. But he does not have the right to delegate it to somebody else. If he's sick, he has to go inform the Kohenim, I'm sorry, I can't do it. And they have to find somebody else. That someone can be me or you, but he doesn't have the right to do that. In which case, Marshall says, the word would not be b'sholoim, but rather b'shiluach, with a ches instead of the mem. The girsa would be, ehei b'shiluach aniva atem, you or I conceivably could be the new shliach, but he cannot delegate it to another shliach. Then as far as the third one, when he answers, kein yovdu kolei vecha Hashem, he's saying, you don't need to. Later on, the Mishnah says that they would throw it off the cliff and before it even fell halfway down, it was already broken up into pieces. So realistically, it's never going to happen that it survives the fall, that he should have to go down and kill it. So therefore, he is actually giving an answer to each of the three questions. He's just giving it in a disguised way. Then Mao Shaw goes on to point out that there's a drush in each of these things as well. What does the Sor LaAzazel represent anyway? So it represents the power of Esav. Further on, the Gemara talks about, we'll learn it tomorrow or the next day, Be'ez Hashem, about that. It's in connection with the Malachim Uzzah and Azoil, who came down to earth and then became corrupt, and it represents the Kirchas Atuma, basically. So you're taking it and you're putting all the Averis of the Jewish people on it and throwing it off a cliff, representing the destruction of all the Kirchas Atuma in the world, in particular, the power of Esav. So the Sor representing Esav, hein Esav achi ish Sor. So he's hairy like a goat. So he's the one who carries all the averus of the Jewish people, in the sense that Medrash says he bears the guilt. Why do we Jewish people do averus? It's all Esav's fault because of the way he treats us. So now on another level, then we can explain. So they're asking him, are you allowed to carry the Sor on your shoulders if the Sor is sick? So he's saying, Faket, don't do that. Then what does it mean? You're going to be carrying not only the Averis of the Jewish people, but all of the Averis of Esav as well? No, better let's put all of our Averis on this goat and let the goat be able to walk on its own rather than this Ish-Iti carrying it, which would symbolize then that he's carrying on himself all these combined Averis of the Jewish people and of Esav. Then he says, then they ask him, what if the Meshaleach is sick? So here you have this vote that from the Chizkuni, that they would pick somebody who's going to die that year. So he would say, so he answers, ehei b'sholom aniva atem, that guy is going to be, as we have the expression, that to a mess you say leich b'sholom. So we say, go in peace. So he'll be b'sholom, but you and I will remain b'sholom. We're not going to go b'sholom, we're going to remain b'sholom, because we're going to remain alive, and he's not, because he's going to die the coming year. And then the third question about if you throw it down the cliff and it doesn't die, do you have to go down and kill it? He says, "Kein yodru kol evecha Hashem." Yeah, let that koyach of Esav be destroyed as the enemy of Hashem. You don't have to go and kill it, be a dying, because Hashem will take care of it. Anyway, so those were the answers. The Chachamim disagree with all of the Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim say, "Chola ma'kibay al-ksefer." If the animal is sick, then yes, the Meshaleach goes and carries it on his shoulders. Chola Meshalcha, if the Meshaleach is sick, Yishachanim Yanachar, then yes, he can delegate it to somebody else. Dochboy v'loimess, and if you throw it down the cliff and it doesn't die, Yeredachar v'misenu, then yeah, you have to go down there and kill it. So according to the simple pshat that Rabbi Eliezer is not giving them an answer at all, then the Chachamim are telling you, we'll tell you what the answers are. According to Maharsha, that he's hinting to them answers, then the Chachamim are saying, we disagree with all those answers. You're saying he can't carry it because Chai Noisa Esatzmai? Yes, but this is an exception. You're saying he can't delegate it to somebody else, only the Koyanim could? No, he could delegate it to somebody else. You're saying it never happens that it falls down and doesn't die? It could happen, and then he has to deal with it. Okay, now the Gemara continues with other questions they asked Rabbi Eliezer, where also he gave them evasive answers. Shalos Rabbi Eliezer Ploini Maula Olam Haba. And by the way, the Meiri has an explanation over here about another explanation of why it is that he's giving these evasive answers. In the case of the Isha, he's telling her basically, look, you have to realize you can't go anytime you have stam a question, you go and ask the greater Talmud Chacham of the generation. You have to kind of know your place. You're a Poshita person. You ask your questions to the lower level Talmud Chachamim. So he's telling you, you're an Isha, you may be an Isha Chachamim, but still, there's no reason you should be coming to me with your questions. Go ask the lesser level Talmud Chachamim who are in the generation. And similarly, he says, as far as these three questions about the Sar Lazazel, basically he's telling them these are not realistic questions. Why are you even bothering to ask them? Don't waste the Talmud Chachamim's time with theoretical questions like that that are not going to ever happen. Anyway, Shalos Rabbi Eliezer, Ploini Mahu L'Olam Haba. They asked him, does Ploini go have a place in Olam Haba? So who is this Ploini? So Rashi gives two explanations. One is there was some particular person who lived at that time who was known to be, he had a bad reputation. So they're asking him, this particular person, what's the story as far as him going into Olam Haba? Then Rashi brings a second explanation that they're asking him about Shloima. Now, why would we think that Shloima not? Well, we have the Psukim in Malachim where it says that his wives were worshiping Avodah Zarah and that he built Bamos for them to do that. And the Pasuk says that he actually followed Avodah Zarah and worshiped it. So now, on the other hand, you have the Gemara in Shabbos that says, Kolo'ima Shloima Chata Eina Elatoya, that if you say that Shloima actually worshiped Avodah Zarah, then you're making a mistake. It just means that his wives were doing it and he tolerated it and he didn't stop them. Which, by the way, there's an explanation in that to mitigate what he did. He was pushed old and worn out. So therefore he didn't have the strength to fight against them, which, and still we're holding him responsible for that, because we see, for example, David HaMelech was even older. David HaMelech lived to 70, Shlomo only to 52. And David, at the beginning of Malachim, by Chasub, Abgodim, Lo Yicham Lo, he can't even keep warm. And still, when he finds out that Adoniyahu is trying to take over the kingship, he pulls himself together and starts giving out orders right and left. And the same way, in other words, Shlomo should have been expected to do something similar. Anyway, the point is, so that's the question. According to that, then they're asking him, the fact is, does he have a place in Olam Haba? Do we understand those psukim literally, and then he forfeited his place in Olam Haba by this Avodah Zarah, or do we understand it like that Gemara in Shabbos, and then he does? The Gemara in Sanhedrin, by the way, mentions that the Chachamim at the beginning of the second Mesa Mikdash, the Anshek Nes Sagdola, were wondering about that as well. They were going to include Shloima in the list of kings who lost their place in Olam Haba. And the Gemara mentions that Hashem, that David HaMelech came and begged them not to, and Hashem sent a fire to show them not, and finally a baskalos to tell them it's not your department. So according to that, then that's the Ploini they're asking about. Tosfos brings yet a third possibility that they're asking him about Avshalom, who rebelled against David. Now in particular, the Pesukim mention over there, one of the first things he did after his revolt, after David had escaped from Yerushalayim, David had left behind 10 pilagshim of his to guard the palace. Achitofel, David's former advisor, tells Avshalom, the first thing you should do is go violate them in front of everybody. That way, everybody will see that you're definitely on the outs with David. They're going to feel more confident in supporting you. Like this, they may figure you may reconcile with David, and then they're going to be left out in the cold. If you do such a drastic thing, then you'll demonstrate you're never reconciling with David, and that way more people will be likely to be on your side. To rape them, push it. And he did that. So the pasuk describes how he did that. Now, the question comes down to then, what is the nature of Pilagshin? Are they considered wives of Shlomo, in which case he's over 10 times on the issue of Eshes Ish, which is a very severe issue? Or do we say that Pilagshin are not full-fledged wives? Maybe they don't have a ksuba, they don't have kiddushin, and therefore they're only like common law wives. They're not actually considered wives in halacha, and therefore that mitigates what he did, and therefore he has a place in Olam Haba. Anyway, so they ask him about Ploini, according to any of these three answers. Omalahem, lo she'el tuni ela al Ploini. Maybe you meant to ask me about Ploini. So if we say that Ploini was a person who lived at that time, then he's telling them, the Me'iri says, basically, he's telling them, it's none of your business. Don't mix into the Eivishter's business of who has a chelik l'olam haba and doesn't. Maybe you meant to ask me about Ploini. In other words, you have no business asking about any Ploini at all. According to Rashi and Tosfos that he's talking about, and the Aruch also brings this as well, that he's talking about Shlomo and Avshalom respectively, then when they ask him about Shlomo, he's saying maybe you meant to ask about Avshalom. In other words, again, to evade and say, I'm not getting into whether Shlomo has a chelik l'olam haba. Again, it's kind of it's none of your business, and I didn't hear it from my Rebbe, and I'm not going to give an answer. Then they ask him, and in fact, in the Gemara, you have, I think, in Argos Abach, you have a geus over there that they asked him. So then they asked him, okay, what about the other Ploini? And he says, well, maybe you meant to ask about the first Ploini. In other words, whichever one you're going to ask me about, I'll evade you and tell you you should be asking about the other one. In other words, basically, you have no business asking about either one. Anyway, then they asked him, Mao lahatso kisba min ha'ari? Can you save the sheep from the lion? Now, some of the Mephoshim explain it means exactly that. In other words, Poshet, you have, let's say, for example, on Shabbos, you have your flock of sheep and a lion is attacking them. Is it legitimate to be Mechalel Shabbos in order to save them? So he answers them, Omalahem, lo shel tuni el al kisba. You've only asked me about a sheep. In other words, according to that way of looking at it, he's telling them, there's no reason to ask that. You know very well, you can't be Mechalel Shabbos for money. So therefore, sure, you can't be Mechalel Shabbos to save the sheep from the lion. And then they ask him, Ma'ala Hatsu Roya Min Hari. They ask him, well, can you save the shepherd from the lion? Omlahem lo shol tuni el ala roya. Then he tells them, you're only asking me about the shepherd. So then that would mean, in other words, what do you think? You don't realize that Pekuach Nefesh Doicha Kol HaTorah Kula. Yeah, you can save the shepherd from the lion even if it takes Chilul Shabbos. So that is one way of explaining it. However, Tosfos explains that the sheep and the lion that we're talking about over here is actually following on the mashal that Nosson HaNavi tells David after the story with Bathsheba. So you have the whole story with David and Bathsheba and Uriah. Afterwards, Nosson HaNavi comes to David and tells him a mashal. There was a rich man and a poor man, and the rich man had lots of sheep, and the poor man had only one, and the rich man had a guest, and he took the poor man's sheep and took it to serve to his guest. And then the nimshal is that you have so many wives, why'd you have to take Uriah's one wife? So now, according to that, then, these people, when they're asking Rabbi Eliezer the question, they're extending that mashal. So they're asking, is it legitimate to save the sheep from the lion? In other words, should we say that if we were there at the time, we would have prevented David, even no matter what it takes, even at the cost of our lives, to prevent him from taking Bathsheba? Who is like the sheep, and he's like the lion, the king of the Jewish people. Because again, you have the question that the Gemara discusses there in Shabbos. You have the famous thing, Kol Yotzeh L'Melchemes Beis David, Kosev Get Krisus. So according to that, Uriah had written a get to Bathsheba, and therefore it's legitimate, Api Alocha, at least it's technically allowed, Api Alocha, for David to take her. Or do we not say that? The flip side is you have a Gemara in Ksubas that says that maybe not. The Gemara in Ksubas first brings up the possibility that maybe there was no get, and the only reason she was mutter to David afterwards is because it was a case of onus. Had it been a case where she was berotzen, then she would have in fact been also to him. So now they're asked, according to that, then they're asking Rabbi Eliezer, which of those two possibilities is it? And then he's evading giving them an answer. And when they ask him, what about the roya then represents Uriah. Would it have been legitimate to actually forcibly try to prevent David from executing Uriah, who was like the shepherd to that sheep? If Bathsheba is the sheep and Uriah is like the shepherd, or not? Do we say that Uriah was chayav nisa because he was a married b'malchus, as the Gemara tells us there in Shabbos, or do we not say that? And again, he's evading giving them a straight answer. So here you have in parenthesis, actually. So now the printed Gemara just has like that. They're just asking about the Kisva and the Ari and the Roya without specifying. Here you have in parenthesis that the En Yaakov apparently had a Girsa, which is based on Tosfos, that actually spells out what the question is. Shalos Rabbi Eliezer Ploini Maula Olam Haba Mis Vidalei Hado Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav Noshim B'Ksuba B'Kiddushin or Pilagshim B'Loi K'Suba B'Kiddushin. Do we hold that Pilagshim do not have K'Suba B'Kiddushin, so therefore what Avshalom did is not so bad? Oloi Omer Loham, and he answers them, Lo Shol Tuni Elal Ploini, maybe you meant to only ask me about Ploini, meaning about somebody else. Ploini Maula Olam Haba. What about Shlomo? Mi Svirulon Hadu Amr Rab Shmuel Ban Chmeni Amr Rab Yonason Kol Amr Shlomo Chata Ene Alatoya Eloi. Do we say that Shlomo did not actually worship Abba Dazara at not? Amr Lahem Lo Shol Tunei Alal Ploini. And he tells them, no, you meant to ask about Ploini. Maula Hatzbo Kispa Min Ha'ari would be as far as Bathsheba and David. Mi Svirulon Hadu Amr Rab Shmuel Ban Chmeni Amr Rab Yonason Kol Ayotzel Mochamas Beis David Get Krisis Koitzel L'Ishtoi. So therefore was Bathsheba legitimately divorced from Uriah, Oloi or not? Amalahemini answers them, Leshol Tuni Alala Kispa. And Maulahatsu Roya Miyadari, do we try to save Uriah from David? Mis Vidalon de Chokin covered Latalmud Makamarab, Balab Murd Malchusu. Do we say it was legitimate for Uriah to show respect to Yoav in David's presence? Why was he a Murd Malchus? Because in David's presence, he had used the expression Adoni about Yoav. And you don't call anybody Adoni, my master, in front of the king. So is that a legitimate thing to do? He was allowed to do that. And therefore, you can't call him a Moed B'Malchus. Oloi, or not, he shouldn't have done that. And he has a right to be treated as a Moed B'Malchus. And again, Om Lahem Lo Shol Tuni El Al Aroya. So again, here in this gear saying, and Yaakov is actually spelling out what the questions meant, whereas in the printed Gemaras, you don't have that. Okay, to be continued tomorrow, B'ez Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Go'ola. Chot Aleph Kislev. So we started talking yesterday, our Rebbe was talking about how Yutas Kislev is the preface to Yafutza minus Secha Chotza, and therefore to the coming of Mashiach. So now on a deeper level, then again, the Geula of the Alter Rebbe on Yutas Kislev is Yafutza minus Secha Chotza, the Teuchen of Mashiach coming, and the Geula of the Shechina and Bnei Israel. Because what is the point of Afutza minus Chotza is that you have a greater knowledge of Elikus in the world. The more there's a knowledge of Elikus in the world, the closer we get to the time, as the Rambam describes, of Yemos Mashiach, when the whole occupation of the world will only be to know Hashem, ki molar et deus Hashem, kamayim al yom machasim. The world won't conceal Elikus, there won't be a golas hashchina. On the contrary, the world will be concealed with and covered with knowledge of Hashem, the ultimate shlemus of the geula of the shchina. Alachas kama v'kama, the Jewish people, as the Rambam says, will be chachamim gdolim and know the dvorim astrumim and understand the mind of the Eibishter as much as a human being could. So that is the ultimate shlemos of the closeness of the Jewish people to Hashem, represented in the words mikrovli, where krov means not only war, it means closeness. Kibadabim hoyu imadi. So that's what we're looking forward to the Moshe Mashiach. Miyad Mamash. Halacha. We're continuing to talk about the halachas of davening on Shabbos. In Kedusha of Musaf, you say Shema Yisrael, and then you say Hu Elikenu. So if you say Echad Hu Elikenu, if you put the word Echad together with Hu Elikenu, then that's you shouldn't do that, because then you're saying the word Echad twice. You're saying Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elikenu, Hashem Echad, and then continuing Echad Hu Elikenu. You're not supposed to say the word Echad twice in succession, because then it looks like Shtei Yishuvos. Rather, you say Hashem Echad Hu Elikenu. The Chazan, who's waiting for the Tzibur, he can begin with the word Echad because he interrupted in the middle. Our minig is actually what you do is he starts off by saying the words Shema Yisrael with the Tzibur, because it shouldn't be the Tzibur is saying Shema Yisrael, and he would be quiet. So he says Shema Yisrael with them, waits until they're done saying or singing Hu Elikenu, and then he continues Hashem Elikenu, Hashem Echad, and begins with Hu Elikenu. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.